This is just a quick apology in advance for all of the horrible popped P's and W sounds. Obviously, the mic is not in a good position and I need to figure that out. I do not have time to go through and edit them all. There's just no way. So I'm really sorry about the horrible windy popping noises on the P's and the W's. I will do my best to work on that for the next podcast. Hi, welcome to NZ Vegan Podcast, episode 143. I'm your host, Elizabeth Collins, and it's a new year again, and I don't know if it's traditional for me. I've been doing the podcast since 2009, and I really did it on New Year's Day 2009. And I'm pretty sure I do a podcast around every New Year. So here in New Zealand, it's January 3rd, so I've kind of missed the New Year, but never mind. Here's my New Year's podcast, and I'm here to talk about the year past, a couple of years past, which I've hardly done any podcasts because I have been in university. But I wanted to report, I try to be honest, and I'm going to report on some of the efforts that I made, in which I pretty much failed miserably. But never fear, it's not a despairing podcast or a negative podcast. Hopefully, it's just brutally honest. And, you know, always, as always, I know in this vast world we have and the growing population of vegans, and some of whom might even be listening to this, that there might be people out there who can relate, who could feel the same way, who are going through the same things. So what it's about is, so what happened, I'll give you a background in case you haven't heard the other episode where I talked about this, but a long time ago in New Zealand when I went vegan, I had been going, you know, I'd been getting to know my family again because I was away for a very, very long time. I was never vegan when my family knew me. And so I came back as an abolitionist vegan. And then, of course, my family did not go vegan. Not one single member of my family has gone vegan, despite all my efforts. In fact, they just don't want to talk about it at all. So I try to talk about it with, I don't have a very big family, by the way. I mean, very small family. I have my father who is pretty much on his way to dementia, to be honest. He's had lots of brain injuries and things like that. So there's my dad, and then there's my older brother and my mother. And I have a sister in England. She's my half-sister. So neither my brother, my mother, nor my sister has gone vegan. My father, like I said, is sort of mentally incapacitated. He has amnesia and all kinds of things, all kinds of problems, and very bad health. I'm not making excuses for him, but, I mean, he's not in a good way, and he hasn't been in a good way since the whole time I've been here. So it's kind of different with him, I guess. So the disappointment is acute, as we all know. Anyone can relate to this. The disappointment that you feel in your family is intense, and I also have three cousins and an auntie and two uncles, and then that's basically the extent of my family, to be honest, in New Zealand. Very small. Of course, there's all extended relatives, but we don't keep in touch, and I don't know them. So it's not a huge pool of people, but either way, I didn't spend that much time with my cousins or anybody like that talking about veganism or anything, because I stopped going to see them because I had been very distressed and unable to actually manage. I was just so miserable going to events where there was food. And the last event I went to was, I think, my auntie's 65th, her retirement / birthday celebration, which was like 7 years ago. Or something like that, maybe even 5 years ago, but I think it might have even been 7 years. I think it was about seven. Oh, it might have even been more than that. My goodness, it might have been like almost 8 years ago. I mean, let me think. Today it's 2019. I came back to New Zealand 2008, so it's now 11 years since I've been back. Almost, it'll be 11 years and the beginning of March. So I'm just trying to think. It might even be like 8 years the last event that I went to with my family that was non-vegan food, and it was this celebration. And I had even done a podcast about it. I was like, I'm done. And then, I stopped. I stopped going to anything that was related to food that were, unless it was a vegan meal. And it was mostly because it was for myself. It was all about me. I admit that. I do not think I am not making a judgment about going to food events, and sitting down at a table. I just couldn't do it anymore, or I didn't want to do it anymore because it was an absolutely miserable experience, and my emotional makeup, the person that I am, it wasn't a good. I couldn't make use of the advocacy opportunity. I did not find a way to do that, and that. So that for me is a failing because for me personally, I really would like to be able to advocate and have the type of personality where I can manage my reactions to a situation where I'm not in control and be able to advocate effectively. And I was not, for whatever reason, I just wasn't able to do that at these events. My street stall is the perfect place for me. Maybe I'm a control freak. I think I might be, the sort of quote unquote control freak. I control that street stall, I control it. It's a space that I set up with very clear signage that is clearly this space and this thing here on the street is about animal rights and it's about veganism. So I've set the stage. It creates an atmosphere where people come up who are ready to talk. The whole reason they're coming up to you is because they want to talk about it. It's very, very rare that you will get people coming up and abusing you just because they're abusive. So be assured, any of you who are thinking of doing that type of street advocacy at the moment, I mean, the backlash is only, there is backlash and it's only going to get worse, especially for some of the antics of some of the other people out there in the, in the welfarist movement, welfarist single issues sort of movement, the dominant movement, who are creating in a way a backlash that really we don't need to create. I mean, there's going to be backlash through non-violent, due to non-violent vegan advocacy, abolitionist, unequivocal advocacy. There's always a backlash when people start standing up for something. And it means, and what it requires, when what we're demanding is change. I mean, that's just inevitable. But add to it the antics, or like people screaming at people, or yelling at people, or whatever, and then the backlash is only going to be worse, and it's not going to be productive. And then those of us who don't do those things are going to be caught up in that backlash. But anyway, I'm going off on a tangent as usual. For now, all I can say is someone who does a vegan street stall, it's the best experience. It keeps me sane. It really, really does because I get to talk about it. I get to argue my points, make my points. The one thing about it, unlike, the people who stand there chanting or who like have videos and stuff, is you do have to listen. You have to listen to the other person. And the other person is going to be spouting these speciesist views at you and saying all kinds of distressing speciesist things. But that's part, you cannot engage with someone and not listen to them. That's the problem that I have with what I call, I mean, I don't know if I've coined the phrase, but I just call it one-way activism, which is where you stand and it's all one way. So you've either got a sign and you're muted and you don't speak, or you're chanting and screaming at people or yelling at people in a crowd, and then that's really not engaging, is it? Or you're broadcasting footage of animals torture and animal slaughter, and that's what you do. You don't actually engage with people. You don't listen to people and you don't talk to people. And I don't think that that advocacy is very good because, unfortunately, in order to engage with people, we do have to listen to them and we have to be able to address their points, which is why abolitionist education is so important. All I ever say to people is read Gary Francione's books because the knowledge in those books and the information in those books, or or his blog or anything, just abolitionist theory, right? It arms you with the ability to engage effectively with any, I don't care what the person says to you. I don't care what anybody says to me now, after learning abolitionist theory, being able to absorb it and process it and think about it. It's not like I'm a robot. Oh, I'm not even going to go into the whole silliness and address all that. But that's why I always tell people, read the books, read the books, read the books, because there's a lot of superficial quote, quotes and things. And at first, I was heartened when I saw this, even though nobody wants to actually mention Gary Francione's work, but they'll quote the theory, which is, animals are not property, they're not things, all of that stuff. And I was excited at first. I was like, oh, yay, I'm seeing this everywhere. And I was like, oh, typical, they're trying to erase the author. But I was pleased, but I'm a little bit, I've come down a little bit from that initial high, because what I see is that it's a lot of superficial quoting, but they don't really understand the theory behind it. So they'll go out and say animals aren't property, and then they'll push a welfarist campaign, or they don't understand the property status. So quoting a platitude or saying a meme or like having a poster is not the same as being able to engage and really get into people's thinking, and really, and you learn a lot about yourself as well. I mean, I cannot stress enough how really wonderful it is to engage with people. Now, people do it, you can do it online, and it is exactly the same. That's how I learned about abolition, and that's how what made me decide to go vegan was engaging with people who were promoting veganism on a forum. And I've talked about that before. So you can do it online. I find online there's a lot more abuse, obviously. People can be very abusive online, and there's a lot of trolling, and so people can find that disheartening. And I find with what I've noticed and my observations, rightly or wrongly, but what I believe I see happening is you have people who are only engaging online, and they're getting trolled by like hundreds of hate posts, and they're like, it's useless. People will never change. People are monsters. The best you're going to get out of them is one day a week, a meat-free Monday or a this or that. And we have to, we have to just be happy with that, and we have to like be celebrate that, because no one, because they've got a very skewed perspective of what reality is. First of all, they're not realizing that they forget about the lurkers. So there's people who are actually reading the stuff who aren't saying anything because, number one, they're intimidated because they've never seen this stuff before. They've never seen, maybe they have never read a vegan sort of advocacy debate before. And so then, they're watching what is happening, but they're not going to engage because they don't feel ready. They don't want to actually join in the conversation, especially if the conversation gets really heated, or especially if there's abuse going on in the conversation. I mean, they're probably going to leave it unless you respond to the abuse and just use the, there's a line where like I block a lot because I don't want to waste time, and I hate straw man arguments so much, so much. I just, oh. But anyway, I'm going off on another tangent. I'm sorry, another tangent. I'm supposed to be sticking to topic, but anyway, I hope all this makes sense. But what I'm saying is, my street stall is, so I control that platform, just like my Facebook page. I control my Facebook page. It's mine. I made it, and it is my vehicle, and I have got no hesitation about blocking or deleting comments that don't serve the purpose of my page. Now, you might say that that's censorship, but no, I don't go to other people's pages and try to get their pages shut down. That would be censorship. But I'm not having someone come on my page and just be abusive, or sort of fill up a thread with a lot of repetitive, because the thing I learned about Facebook is like, the comments, you have to keep opening them and stuff. And I want the lurkers to have a conversation that they can follow that isn't circular and circular and circular. So if If I've made a statement in response to someone's comment and I've addressed everything that they've said, which to me is what vegan education, you address the things that they say. You have to listen to those things before you can address them. You have to read those things, which are sometimes quite upsetting things, because it's very speciesist and we know the horror of speciesism, right? We know, because we recognize that animals are persons, non-human animals are persons, not things. The horror that underlies the knowledge that underlies when we think about these issues is very real. I mean, it's not even hyperbole or anything. I mean, this is literal torture and literal horror is the only way. Terror, terror, and unbelievable. Just wow. We know. So it's a very, very, very serious issue. It's not trivial at all. So for us, we have to take it seriously, but you can, so, but you still have to listen to it. You have to listen to someone say, something speciesist. And then when you address all of those things, and then if you have another person come underneath and basically repeat what the other person said, or not address it or create a small straw man argument that derails the conversation. And my page is educational, so I'll say, I've already responded to that, look above. And then if they keep doing it, I'll just delete and say, this is because I don't, yeah, I just want people to come to the page and not be bogged down by a bunch of comments that are taking them off on a tangent, on a straw man tangent, that's away from the point of what I'm trying to do, which is educate about veganism. So I'm very strict about what goes on my page. It's my page. If you want to go and make a straw man argument and say that all abolitionists want us to scream and shout and abuse people, go ahead and make a post about that on your page. Do it. And if people come and engage with you, more power to them. But I, what? Go and do it. But on my page, you're not going to derail and twist to your own agenda or troll or manipulate, the information on my page. No, you're not going to do that. So at this, so it's another place where I feel in control. And at the street stall, again, like I said, it's a platform. But when I am just going through life and I'm with my family and it's someone's birthday and everyone's sitting around, and the terror, the underlying, right, the horror is right there in front of you. And we're surrounded by it every day. You cannot leave your house, right? But the thing that for me, the thing, the crossover where I stopped, where I wasn't able to manage was at events where it was, we're all going to gather together and it's a celebratory event and we're all going to sit down at the table and I'm going to join them at that table. That I just stopped wanting to do, and I stopped doing it because I go to work and we go into the lunchroom, and there are people right next to me wearing leather, eating, as we know, the all drinking, having milk in their coffee. There's always this big drama about milk, and it's just in the kitchens. Because another thing is, like, at my jobs. The milk is supplied, like the cow's milk for coffees. It's part of the job. When you get a job in New Zealand and you go to your office, if there's not milk in the fridge, it would be like a mutiny. But is there ever any plant milk? No. Now, I understand that there's no plant milk because if they buy a big carton of soy milk and I'm the only one who's drinking it once a day for my morning cuppa, then it will go off because soy milk doesn't last forever. So economically, they're not going to buy it if most of it's going to be thrown away. However, at my last job, we actually, there was a few of us who did not drink cow's milk, and we actually took a stand and we said we want to have our milk supplied. And we made it happen that they supplied us with soy milk because everyone else is getting their milk paid for and getting free tea, but I would always have to bring, like, I had my milk at home. I make my own almond milk, or I was making other things out of cheaper things when I was a student. But when I was working, I would make almond milk. So I would always have to remember in the morning if I wanted a cup of tea, at my desk or whatever, or a cup of coffee or whatever, and I didn't want to go out and pay like $5 or $6 or $7 for a, a takeout. I would have to remember to bring a little jar of my milk and put it in the fridge so I had some that for that day. Now, when I was living 3 minutes walk from home, it was no big deal. I would just come home and have my, you know, grab it. But the bottom line is that's what we have to do. So why did I go on about, why am I talking about that? Anyway, hopefully that's useful information. So what I recommend is if there's a few of you people, because there are some people who aren't vegan who don't drink dairy products because they're lactose intolerant, or they are for whatever reason they don't take dairy products for dietary reasons. There's lots of people like that. So if you find out that there's a few people in your office who don't use cow's milk in their coffee, albeit for a different reason than you, you can try to make a case. If you're in a place like me with all the cow's milk is supplied for free and everyone else is getting it, you can say, hey, what about us? We deserve to have free stuff as well. So if that's important to you, it might not be. One of the people at my other job didn't like it because she said, this is a public, you know, this is a government organization, and I don't want them to be taking money out of the coffers to pay for my plant milk, because there's not enough money to help the children and all those kinds of things. So she made a principled stand against advocating for the plant milk, and I do admire her for that stand. So you may choose to take that stand depending on where you work, but if it's a private company, definitely. And so, yeah. So anyway, what was I saying? Yeah. So I never went to events. So I stopped going to any event, and it was always just family events, because I haven't, you know, made a huge big bunch of new friends in New Zealand. I do have friends. They're all abolitionist vegans, because it's very hard for me to be genuinely friends with anyone who isn't. That's just the way it is. So mostly when we're talking about food related events, it's either work. Because in a lot of places, I'm sure it's the same all over the world, but I definitely notice it in New Zealand, there's always an excuse to have a morning tea. You know, oh, we've got a new employee coming on, we're all going to have a morning tea. Everybody brings something for a special morning tea, and we're all going to sit around and welcome them and eat. Or if it's someone's birthday, even at work, or if someone's leaving, or just there's always an excuse to like, oh, we're all going to bring food and we're all going to sit down and eat together. And to me, that's a wonderful thing. I am actually a very social person. I like company. I like talking to people. I'm very social, but I've been very antisocial in the way because I wasn't able to, I just did not enjoy that. I hated them, to be honest. I hated those events, because there's a difference when you're in the kitchen and you know, the somebody or even your workmates are like, it's all of your lunch break, and you kind of all go to the kitchen at the same time, and you all sit down and you all eat lunch together, and they're eating their non-vegan meal. Don't ask me why, but to me, that's something that I manage. I mean, I kind of have to. If I was avoiding even that, you know, I don't think it would be, I would really, really isolate myself, really, really. But when it's like, we're going to get together and go out to dinner, all of us are going to go out to dinner and we're going to relax and have a good time, have a couple of glasses of wine and have a few laughs. Well, I'm not laughing and I'm not relaxed. I'm not laughing and I'm not relaxed because it's all non-vegan stuff. And to me, it is actually terror and horror and blood, you know, babies choking on their own blood in slaughterhouses and just torture. And that's what it is. So there's a difference to me between sort of enduring what we have to endure. And it's not, I mean, I'm not the victim here. I'm not the victim. Okay. In terms of, it's not my blood and it's not my skin and it's not my flesh. But what I mean is, there's, to me, what, for whatever reason, emotionally, there was a difference between all the things that I deal with as a person who does leave the house and who does have a job and who does interact with other people, you know, and you have to, and you are surrounded by animal products, by body parts, bits of flesh and skin, and the milk of slaughtered babies. I mean, that's the reality we live in. But there was a difference between that and like, let's go out and we're all going to relax together and we're going to have fun. And it's always about food or drink, and there's non-vegan alcohol, you know. Or, I mean, it doesn't always have to be alcohol, but a lot of times in New Zealand it is. So there was a difference, and I just was like, why am I forcing, why am I doing this to myself? I'm absolutely miserable. I hate being here. I don't, this is not relaxing to me. This is not enjoyable to me. And that was the bottom line. So I made a stand, and I was like, I'm not going to do that to myself anymore. I would much rather stay at home alone and just read a book than go to a restaurant with a bunch of people. And it's all non-vegan. And, but I would love to go out with those people because I like the people. They're interesting. Maybe they're my colleagues, maybe they're my family, and I enjoy talking to them and we have a lot of connections about other things. Because there's this the thing about speciesism is it's just, it is as natural to them as drinking water and breathing air. That's a quote from Gay Francione. Really wonderful resource that I'm going to recommend that really is helping me, although I haven't been able to actually put it into action, not through lack of trying, is Gary Francione and Anna Charlton, who wrote Eat Like You Care and who wrote the Abolitionist Approach book, which is like the Abolitionist Approach book, and also Advocacy for Animals, which are three books that were recently written, which are shorter books and are all about condensing it because people apparently are resistant to reading bigger books that were written in the 90s, I guess, or like early 2000s. I don't know. But they are wonderful, wonderful books. I love those books and I would totally recommend to everyone to read those books as well. But I also want people to read all of Gary Francione's earlier books as well. But anyway, they do these video advocacy sort of seminars, like a video, what is it called? A webinar, right? And they're recorded. And Anna says a lot of things that really that helped me because what they talk about this issue a lot about being in a social situation or a family situation like Christmas, or in America there's Thanksgiving and stuff like that. And and the fact that, they remind us that, maybe you wouldn't go and sit at a table with a bunch of people who were blatantly anti-Semitic and their whole entire night was all about anti-Semitism, right? And you And there would be not like you could t say that to someone. I don't go out to dinner with a group of anti-Semitic people who sit around all night and denigrate Jewish people and blah blah blah. And that would be fine. But I mean, and that would be understood and people get that. But when you say I don't go out w to dinner with people who are drinking cow's milk in their coffee, I mean, again, I don't actually. I'm not going to condemn you for that because I completely relate. I don't do it. But the difference between there is no difference morally. But the thing about we're starting to make a headway against it. Like we're starting to make a headway against it. We're starting to talk about how it's unacceptable. It is wrong. But the truth is that even people who are fighting for the rights of women and all those things, they still go and they have cow's milk in their coffee. So it's as natural to them, it's a second thought to them as eating, drinking water and breathing air. And this is what they mean. But Gary and Anna do a way better job. So I'm going to post a link to their webinars because they really are amazing in the way that they engage with people on this. So I'm not saying that it's morally different, but I have people in my life who are wonderful people in all respects. I enjoy their company. We have a lot in common. I can talk to them, especially at my last job. I worked with social workers who, to me, are amazing people. I love social workers. They worked with children. They were about child abuse. And they were amazing people, and I miss them so much. None of them were vegan, so there was always that barrier. There was always that it's like a juxtaposition of this pure evil, really. I mean, when you look at what, I mean, I'm not religious and I don't use the word evil lightly, but I don't use it religiously, I should say, but I do use it. So when you look at what happens to animals, it is evil, it's monstrous, it is diabolical, it is horrific, right? It's terrorism, it's all of those things. And And you have that, and then you have this other side of that person, which is everything else about them. You know, they're caring. They might be incredibly empathetic. Sorry. They might be incredibly empathetic, and or helping, you know, doing a lot of good and nurturing and all of these things. So that's the weird juxtaposition that we always find ourselves in as vegans, as and you know, I that other side, that the evilness that is of the actions. I'm not saying that these are deliberately evil people. I'm not saying that they wake up in the morning and say, I'm going to torture animals today. You know, they don't even think about it. But it's never far from my mind. Like, I cannot, and I don't want to ever forget why I'm vegan. And so when I'm sitting with someone, there's always this double speak in my head. I don't know if other people experience this. So I'm sitting with someone and they're helping me. Maybe I'm having a crisis. Maybe something is upsetting me and I need support. And they're being the most incredibly supportive person and they're helping me and they're showing me love. And then they are drinking a cup of tea, which has cow's milk in it. So there's always that part of my mind that is gazing in abject horror at the tea and the milk. Can anyone relate to this? So that's what it's like to be vegan, I guess, in a nutshell, at the moment. But we are making headway. But anyway, so I'm sorry I'm rambling. It's already been 30 minutes. Oh my gosh. I'm sorry. This is what my podcast is like, though, and it does help me. So fine. I'm sorry if I'm rambling, as usual. So I decided, though, I did decide after I. Because I mean, it is, I was isolating myself because I'm really love to go out with people, but I just couldn't. That darkness was just there, and I wasn't, I couldn't pretend to enjoy myself. I didn't enjoy myself. I mean, really, I just wanted to scream. So I stopped going, and I was the better for it for myself. I was much more relaxed. I didn't have to put myself through that situation. I just stopped going. And I explained to people why. I wasn't like I actually really tried to get them to understand. I said, I really don't enjoy myself because, not because of the company or the intention, which is always good. It is because those things, those parts of the animals and things, I cannot relax or enjoy myself around that. So when I'm going to go out and try to relax, it's my time and it's my, you know, I'm not on the clock, I'm not at work, I'm not going, you know, wage slaving it. Why should I put myself in this, and we're in a place where I'm unhappy and not having a good time? And I'm not saying that anyone should. But, all right, I'm finally getting to the finally getting to the point, maybe. What I just said, but I did realize the thing that galvanized me to not do it was it was isolating. Now, just to be clear, at work, I wanted to show respect to the people's, not to the actions that I don't respect. But in other words, when we had a new employee, I always went and sat down at the table. I always went because it would have been disrespectful and rude of me not to go to the welcoming. So I was there for the, I'm like, I'm here for the welcome. I'm here to welcome the new employee. I live in New Zealand. And there is the indigenous culture here. There are efforts, you know, small efforts to address the injustice that was wrought upon the Maori people through colonialism and racism, and especially in the government departments. Now, a lot of it sort of to me seems like lip service, doesn't really address it. However, there are efforts to reanimate cultural practices that were oppressed. And part of the Maori culture is incredibly welcoming, and there are very, very deep welcoming practices that is part of the culture. And there's also karakia, which is prayer, and I am not religious. And Māori were not Christians until they were colonized. But karakia is part of the welcoming ceremony, and it's and before the colonization, if I'm I believe I still don't haven't learned properly, but there was karakia anyway, because it was just a gathering where you would join together in song or a chant, and someone would lead it, and it was like, here we are, this is our intention, this is what, and it would set the mood, and then you would have and there's porphyry, which is the welcome. So every time a new employee came, we would engage in a Māori cultural welcome. Because again, like I said, we're trying to reanimate these practices that we oppressed and tried to kill colonizers, and I'm descendant of colonizers. Well, I'm a descendant of Scottish and Irish, but I'm white Pākehā, New Zealand. My mum was born here, so I'm a descendant of that. And so we do that. And so there was no way I was going to stay in my, because like the whole office would empty, and I'd and so this is what would happen. So a new employee would come, because there's a lot of changeover. It was a very tough job, you can imagine. Government jobs and working with, child abuse and stuff. There's like a lot of turnaround, as they call it. So we would have new employees come and go a lot. So what it was, everyone would get up and go at this allotted time to the morning tea, unless you were on an emergency call. I mean, sometimes people can't go because of the nature of the work. It is like a type one job, which means 24/7. I mean, obviously it's child welfare, so that goes without saying. But most of the time, especially in the department, the second department that I worked in, where it wasn't the 24-hour crisis call center, which is where I originally worked, everyone would go to the thing. So I would go, and there'd be all the food there, and I would take plates, but then I even stopped. Oh, I got so naughty. I think I even stopped taking stuff. I can't remember. But I used to take stuff, or I'd take stuff and I'd leave it on there, and it would all be. Oh, and I would always take something. I would always take vegan food and leave it there. And then we would have the welcome, and we would welcome the employee, and then it would be. And then there was always to bless the food. And of course, to me, that food wasn't blessed. I mean, I'm not religious anyway, but I understand, you can take these things and you can embrace them. You don't have to reject them outright. I mean, I think blessing the food and expressing thanks and gratefulness and joy of this beautiful food is a good thing. And it doesn't matter if you don't believe in God or Christianity or whatever, you can still sort of make it your own and make it a good thing. But I couldn't. I would never volunteer to bless the food, because they would say, "Who wants to bless the food?" And I would just be like, "That food is not blessed to me. That food is torture and death," So I would never bless it. And then during the blessing, all I could think was, "This food is just not blessed." So I wouldn't really sort of embrace that part of it. I'd just sort of stand there and just be like, you're just that, oh gosh, I mean, I'm lucky that I'm not like completely losing my mind. So that would happen, and then it would be like, okay, and always the visitor or the new person or the employee, whoever's occasion it was about, would always be like, okay, grab a plate and dig in. And then that's when I would leave. Like, as soon as the food started, I would leave, and people got used to me leaving. Even when I would always bring food and leave it on the table, but I would leave. And there was things like fresh fruit on the table. I mean, there was vegan stuff on the table, but I just would leave, and then I'd go back to the office and I'd sit on my chair. And I was all alone in this empty office, and everybody was in there talking and laughing and sharing things and eating and drinking. And at first, it was a relief to me. I was like, I'm so glad I'm not in there, because of this, like I said, this juxtaposition and just this horror. And I couldn't focus away from that, and I was just miserable. And I can fake it, I can fake things, but I felt like an imposter. What I really wanted to say was, stop! This is wrong. This should be vegan food, of course, I could have done that, but I don't think I would have lasted very long in my job if I had created that much disruption. To some people, that's the right thing to do. They want to create a disruption and, maybe end up, I don't know, jobless, I don't know, or go to court, and I don't know. I'm just not that person. I mean, I have a cat to take care of. I need my job. I'm scared. I'm fearful. I'm scared of authority. I'm not a very brave person. I'm not. I want to be braver, but I'm not a brave person. I'm quite cowardly, and it shows in many, many ways. But anyway, I'd be all alone in the office. And then after a while, it started to be a drag. And then, like, my friends who I had explained to, because I love the people I worked with, they were amazing. And I would say to them, you have to understand. I said, please understand. It is not that I don't want your company. It's not that I don't understand that you're doing this out of love for the human, right? Completely indifferent to what's happening to the non-humans. And I would say, that's why I'm not there. You must understand it. This is the only way that I can. Otherwise, I will be very sad and I don't enjoy it. And they would understand that. But then they would always try to bring fruit and stuff. And then I didn't want to go near the table. So it became a bit of a phobia. And I sort of dug myself into this kind of, to be honest, this kind of hole where I had set this precedent or set the stage for this behavior, and then I didn't know how to get out of it. So then they would be very sweet. I mean, these are how wonderful these people are. They would bring me plates that they had put together of fresh fruit and anything vegan. They would bring me plates to my desk. Now, does that show love to me? I know. And it was all about me. But in my head, I'm like, this is really nice. You are so considerate to me. Can you please just be that considerate to the other animals, and then everything will be okay. If you could just broaden your consideration, this wonderful ability you have to be considerate and to think of others and to care about others, and just broaden that to all animals, we're going to be okay. That's all we need. So anyway, this was the situation I was in. And then when I left my last job and I was going to university, I decided to make a change. I said, no, I want to try once again to go back to these events and be a positive presence, because I was convinced by the Anna Charlton and the webinars and what other abolitionists are say about how they manage it. And I was like, it's an opportunity for advocacy that I'm missing out on, because what these people do is they use it as an opportunity for advocacy. So number one, they take the best, most delicious vegan food that you could ever imagine, and therefore they're showing people and they're introducing people to vegan food, which I did do, but I just would leave the room. But not only that, they're saying that it is an opportunity because inevitably your presence, not your absence. I was sort of hoping my absence would be like this kind of impact, but it wasn't. I probably made it easier for everybody that I left, right? So your presence is a as effective, the fact that you're present, because everybody knows that you're vegan, and they're just saying that there's probably some kind of impact on them. And I can see that. And inevitably you would get questions, inevitably. Now, it's not always when someone is in the act of engaging, of consuming animals, and you are challenging them or talking to them about it. It could be a situation where their defenses are way, way, way up. So, you have to know how to do it and you have to practice it. But I was incapable because my emotions and my concern for my own happiness and welfare, and welfare and peace of mind took over, and I just removed myself. And I thought, well, there's very rare times in my life where I get to go out and relax. And what I don't see why I should, in my evenings when I get to come home to my vegan house and not have to smell or see or be surrounded by animal bits and pieces. And this is my safe time. This is my place where I can be finally to breathe a sigh of relief and not have to deal with that. Why should I take that time and go and put myself in a situation which is supposedly about having a good time? It's not on the way to work, which is I can't, it's I have to go to work. I have to get on either the bus or walk, or if I'm driving, I guess. But this is a situation where I'm supposed to be able to have some me time, and why should I put myself in that? So that was sort of my thinking. And I want to ch I do actually want to change this, is what I'm trying to say. So I decided when I went to uni that I would start a whole fr afresh, because at my last job I was there for 6 years and I kind of felt trapped in my own behavior. Like I said, I kind of felt like I set up this stage and then I didn't know how to get out of it. Like if I had suddenly, although it was no big deal, nobody else really cared, People wouldn't care. And if I suddenly stayed for the food and I hovered around the table instead of leaving, and I gathered up the fruits and I ate my vegan food and I stood there and talked with people, no one would be like, what are you doing here? why aren't you leaving or anything like that. This is all, you know. But I developed something that I was comfortable with, but then it ended up being uncomfortable with, and I didn't know how to stop, you know, break out of it. So I thought, let me start afresh. And so I went to uni, and again, everyone always wanted an excuse for morning tea. And so it was like, if it was someone's birthday, there was 14 of us in the class. So 14 birthdays a year, depending on whether they fell within holidays. But even the ones who fell within holidays, someone got hold of a birthday list and was like, oh, it's so-and-so's birthday in November, but let's have a party now because we want them to celebrate the birthday. So we would always, always do it. And I stayed and I brought vegan food, and a lot of times other people would bring vegan food. But And then it was like, we're going to go out after, you know, let's all get together and go out to dinner. So the second year, so we there's only a 2-year course, and there's the first years and the second years. And so for when you're a first year student, you have all the second years. And then in the second year, you become the second years, and you're the ones who are sort of leaving. And then there's the first years. So we tried to sort of keep in touch with them and sort of hang out with them. And I went. So I was like, I'm going to do this. I'm going to go to this dinner. So they picked a restaurant. It was a Thai restaurant in downtown Auckland. And I was thinking, God, I hate this, because I hate going to restaurants with non-vegans. I just shouldn't use the word hate. I don't enjoy it. And so we went. And then I went up to the, I looked at the menu and I was like, I don't really know what's going on here. So I went up to the guy and where you do your orders, and I said, do you have a vegan dish? Because when I rang them, I even rang them first, and they named me like 3 things, but then when I looked on the menu, there was some doubt about some of the ingredients, because it was like such and such sauce or something, and I was like, oh, I don't know if that's a vegan sauce though. So when I spoke to the guy who was taking the orders, he seemed to be very definitive, and he knew exactly, and he said, we have one dish that is suitable for vegans, one, and it's that one. And he pointed to it, and it was a dish that was had chicken flesh on it, but they could just omit completely the chicken flesh because it wasn't mixed in with anything, and then that was your vegan dish. And that was it. He's like, that's it. So it was basically steamed rice and like steamed carrots in some sort of coleslaw. So, I mean, that was what I got to eat for like $15. And I was like, oh, this is crap. So it was boring, and it didn't. And I was like, ugh, I can't believe I'm paying for this. But the whole point was that I was there. But then I'm sitting at the table, and it's all happening again. So the people to my left are saying, what are you going to have? Oh, I'm going to have that looks good. I'm going to have the beef. Oh, I want the chicken. And I'm just, you know, and I just was like, I cannot stand this. So I didn't enjoy myself, but I stayed, and I endured. I gritted my teeth. I white knuckled it, as they say. And then I was like, well, that didn't go well. And I'm ashamed to say that for the rest of the 2 years, I did not go out to dinner ever again with anyone. And they just had all these big get-togethers, and it's like, we're going to so-and-so's house for pizza, we're gonna have a pizza party, and I just wouldn't go. So I completely failed. I fell completely flat, and I wasn't able to do it, and it did not happen. The morning teas, it was like, we were at class, we were at our lecture, and then in our 15-minute break, it was like, happy birthday, and we'd all break out the food. So it wasn't like I could be like, I'm leaving, and I left. But and I didn't leave, and I stayed. And even like, we would sometimes say, oh, let's just get together and get pizzas. And then they would be like, okay, Liz, we're going to get you a vegan pizza. And, you know, I'd be like, okay. And then we'd make sure that there was a vegan pizza for me, and things like that. So it's not like they wouldn't, the first restaurant was total rubbish. I mean, it was a terrible restaurant, but I could have suggested a better restaurant. And if I was more proactive about this, I could be like, hey, everyone, that restaurant that we went to was useless. There wasn't any vegan options. It was just one. It was so boring. Come on, let's go somewhere else. And they would have been like, okay, totally, man. Yeah, let's do it. I mean, there would have been no animosity. There would have been no problem. But I just gave up. I had that one there, and I was like, I'm not doing this. And I stopped. So all through the year, there's been all these social events, and then there's all these photos, and everybody takes photos and like selfies, and they're all like out, and I'm just not there. I'm just missing from the photos. So I failed, basically. It didn't happen. And I thought, okay, you know, obviously, I don't know, I'm still, this is not happening. And But I do want to, for the reasons, like I said, of being a positive, because I don't think being absent is a good thing, and advocacy wise, you know, and also, I'm putting myself, you know, above the other animals. I'm sort of, I mean, look, like I said, I'm not, this is just me. I want to be able to go to be able to do this and be that positive presence. And also there are selfish reasons, because I did feel isolated. So there is another selfish reason. There's always a selfish reason, no matter what. I don't care who you are. Read Anthony DeMello. He's like, it's all about, oops, the music's playing, sorry, in the background. Sorry if you can hear that. I'm sitting far away from the computer though, so maybe you can't. I've already used up my 50-minute time frame, but hopefully I'm saying some things that people can relate. And I'm also trying to gear myself up. And also, when I do my podcast, I articulate. I find that speaking out loud, some people write it down, but to me, speaking out loud, I can put things, I sometimes inside my brain, for whatever reason, everything can be quite muddled and things can swim around. And then when I talk, I can sort things out and I can say things that actually make sense to me. And I kind of figure things out as I'm talking about them. So there'll be times when I do a podcast and I'm figuring things out loud. And so it helps me. And then I figure, well, it might help someone else. So I put it out on the airwaves. And that's what I did. That was the beginnings of this podcast. So hopefully other people are listening and maybe relating. There might be people listening who are like completely don't relate to this at all. And they can just turn it off and that's fine. So like I said, even the podcast that I do is selfish reasons, you know. Everything is self-interest, really. Anyway, so what I'm desperately trying to do now is figure out a way. So I talked to my so Truk helped me a lot. Truk came to visit me in Christmas before I went to uni, and was giving me some pointers. And she said that one of the things that she does is when she's there, she doesn't look at what everyone else is eating. She just focuses on what she's eating. One of the things that I sometimes do, whether this is healthy behavior or not, is like if someone's eating a piece of cake, I'll just pretend it's a vegan cake that they're eating, because cake can be vegan. In fact, so much stuff can be vegan. So you can like someone can like and then I can sort of like T just like tell myself like it's a vegan cake, it's a vegan cake, and then maybe I can sort of in get through it, but I don't want to negate the reality that it is not a vegan cake either, and sort of like erase the other animals from it either. So I don't want to do that. But sometimes I'll just comfort myself with, oh, that could be a vegan cake, you know, we could be sitting here eating vegan cake. I don't know. Don't know about that. But anyway, so that was what Truk said. She's that she goes and she just doesn't look at, and she just talks about her food. Because the thing that's another thing that's that I don't like, that is a situation that I don't enjoy, is, you know, you'll go to the lunchroom and everyone will be like, oh, what have you got for lunch? Oh, that smells good. Something smells really good. And I'm sitting there thinking, it's horror and it's death and it's torture and it's wrong. It doesn't smell good. Even if it does smell good, I mean, I did not go, I wasn't raised vegan, and I know that things can taste delicious. I mean, food, you know, I know that non-vegan food is can be very, very delicious. I ate it for 34 years. So that's difficult, because everyone does except for me. And then everyone's like, oh, what have you got for lunch? And I'm like, oh, this is, you know, chickpea salad with tahini dressing, whatever. But I never turn around to them and say, what have you got for lunch? That's a question I'd like to ask those of you who are successfully able to do this. I forgot to ask Will. Maybe I'll ask him, because he was helping me. What do you ask them what they've got for lunch? Because I don't want to know. So like if someone, it's almost like a courtesy. So it's like I'm not returning the courtesy. Same with someone comes in with a brand new pair of shoes and they're these shiny leather boots and they're just very snazzy, and everyone's like, oh wow, look at those shoes. Oh my gosh, your shoes are so great. I love your shoes. I don't say it. I don't love their shoes. I do not love those shoes because they're made out of someone's skin. But when people say to me, oh wow, look at your shoes, they're great, I'm like, yeah, these are Piccadilly shoes, they're vegan. But I never turn to them and say, oh, that's great. The only time I have to very carefully ascertain what compliments I'm going to give, because I'll carefully look at what they're wearing. I'm like, that looks like cotton to me. And then I'll be like, that's a very beautiful dress. But I'm only going to say it if I know it's vegan, because if it's not vegan, it's not beautiful. So that's another thing, is in the whole food thing, is like, oh, someone's got a delicious smelling lunch. And I keep quiet I don't say anything. Because the only thing that I can legitimately say is, I find that horrifying because I know it's made out of animals. That's the only thing I can legitimately say in that moment. And am I going to build rapport with these people who are my colleagues? So here's where I'm going with this. I'm about to graduate from university if I can finish this thesis on time, which I've taken a whole 2.5 weeks off. I've done nothing on it, nothing on my thesis, and now it's crunch time, so I'm really in trouble, but I think I'll be all right. I wouldn't have done it if I didn't think I could still finish it. But I'm going to start working full time in March, and I am determined to be able to socialize with these people because I, like I said, I do want to be that positive force. And maybe even we can go to a vegan restaurant at some point. The issue with that, especially at uni, is that unfortunately, especially in Auckland, I don't think it's the same in other countries or cities, but here, if it's vegan, it's like three times the price, man. I don't care. It's just such a rip-off. Okay, so I mean, I don't know. I don't really. When I look at prices in vegan restaurants, maybe some of them are a bit more comparable now. Maybe I've lost my focus because in the beginning it was ridiculous, the prices. I mean, the Golden Age, which was a vegan restaurant that opened in Auckland right after I moved here, which was the only vegan restaurant in the entire country, as far as I know, their prices were actually okay. But I found other places. So I was too scared to. I wasn't too scared, but I was like, everyone's gonna be like, oh my God, I can't afford this. You know, like there's this couple of vegan restaurants here. It's like, you've got to be kidding me. I mean, why are we paying so much just because it's vegan, you know? So maybe that's changed. Maybe I only really go to vegan restaurants because there's so many more in Auckland, and I don't go to non-vegan restaurants. So maybe the prices are comparative, but I still feel like it's more expensive. I mean, it's more expensive for soy milk. It's more expensive for vegan cheese if you're into that. It's more expensive for, wheat gluten cutlet thingies or burger, you know, vegan burgers and vegan sausages. It's just more and more expensive, ridiculously, unbelievably expensive for those things here. So when I was at uni, I didn't really suggest a vegan restaurant, but I'll be working with people who earn a salary and they're not broke, and you know they can go to a vegan restaurant with me. So I really want to be able to manage this. I really want to be able to make this happen. I really want to be able to socialize with these people because there's that the same reason where I've always wanted to do it, but there's also a very big self-interested reason. And maybe being a selfish human, the self-interested reason is going to galvanize me to do this more than the other, you know, reasons. It's because the job I'm going to be in, I'm going to be very beginner. I'm going to need, you know, I need to bond with these people because I want to be a member of the team. I need to be able to count on them and I need them to be able to count on me. I need to be able to have connection with these people. So I don't want to isolate myself too much. You know, I don't know what's going to happen. I think that there are other people who are married, who have kids, who don't go out and go out for dinner and stuff with everyone. And I don't think it affects your ability to bond or anything. Just because you don't socialize outside work is fine. I mean, when I was at my last job, my job where I was for 6 years, I became very close to everyone. And I was, like I said, you saw the behavior. I mean, I just told you about it. And that was fine with everyone. Honestly, though, it didn't affect the ability to bond. So now I'm, see, here I am figuring out. I'm like, maybe hang on a minute. Is it really? Do I really need to do this? No, I want to do it. I want to do it for the animals. I want to be able to be that presence, to be that vegan in the room, and to be ready for those questions that might come after dessert when everyone's finished eating. And to be able to not react, or because here's what will happen. So I was at uni. I talked about this in my podcast a while ago, and we had a pizza. Everyone said, "Let's get pizza," and we all got pizza. And there was the company who did the pizza did have a vegan pizza, although it was just not good. I mean, it was covered in sweet corn. It was the weirdest. I like covered in corn, you know, like bits of corn. Like the whole entire thing was corn. You know how hard it is to eat a pizza with loose corn kernels? I mean, I just got corn everywhere, all over the floor. I was like, why? Don't they know that you can just put vegetables and tomato sauce and that's a vegan pizza? Anyway, but that's the side. But somebody said to me, how do you, don't you miss eating cheese? So these are the kinds of things that come up, you see, in these situations. And instead of, I don't know, I said, well, I don't miss, I said, no, I don't, I said something, I can't remember what I said, but I basically said to them, I used to enjoy cheese, but I don't enjoy baby slaughter. And that just ended it. There was just, that was like the end of the conversation. It did not go anywhere after that. Now, the person who I said that to is still a really, we're close and we get along and everything's great, but it was an opportunity that I blew because I reacted instead of, reaction is different from response, So I've got a ways to go. I definitely did fail miserably. I did not go to any of the social dinners at all. I completely avoided the situation. And yeah, so I failed. But it's a new beginning. I will continue to report on my progress. If anyone has got any hints, for example, what do you do? I wish that Gary and Anna would do another webinar because that's a question I would really like to ask. But I'll ask, there's lots of people I can ask. So if anyone's listening and you have the inclination to comment, because my podcast is actually on a blog, it's called nzveganpodcast.blogspot.com. And you can make a comment on this post. So I'll post the episode and it'll just be in a podcast, reader, but there is actually a blog where you can go and make a comment. So if anybody has any suggestions, or who can tell me, if someone says to you and you're in the lunchroom together and you're all eating lunch, and then someone's like, oh, that looks really good. What are you eating? And you say, oh, I'm eating this. Do you turn around and ask them what they're eating? If so, why and how? And how do you manage that? Because if someone says, oh, I'm having beef taco, I mean, are you certainly not going to say, oh, yum, or oh, that sounds delicious. So what do you do? Or do you, like me, not reciprocate and just not reciprocate at all? Because that's what I do. I do not turn around to them and say, what are you eating? Because I don't want to know. And in fact, I've literally said that to people. Like, people have said to me for dinner tonight, something, something, and I'm like, I don't want to know. And I'll even do the palm up, like the palm, talk to the hand, the palm thing. I'm like, please don't tell me, I don't want to know. Now, everyone who in my last job understood, and they'd because they'd forget sometimes, and they'd say, oh, right, sorry, I forgot. But I don't want to know. I don't want to hear about the animal flesh you have marinating on your kitchen counter. I don't. So if anybody has any ideas about that one, when you're all sitting together and everyone's saying, oh, that smells good, what are you having? And then you never reciprocate. What, how do you reciprocate? Why would you? Why wouldn't you? What's your thoughts? That would be helpful. I would appreciate that. Thank you. So when I was talking to my friend Will about this, he said that I asked him, he said, let you need to do some role playing. So I did some role playing with him. And he just had some good responses. And yeah, and it's always about food. Like, you're never going to have someone when you're at dinner and you're the vegan and you're talking to the waiter or the waitress and saying, can you please, what do you put in that? No, that is not vegan. Is there any way you can leave that out completely? Or did you know that ghee is not vegan? Therefore, I know you're a pure vegetarian restaurant, however, blah, 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 blah. And then your table mates are listening with interest and observing this interaction and maybe thinking to themselves, gee, I'm glad I don't have to do that. I don't know what they're thinking. But then they turn to you and say, gosh, that sounds like it's really difficult, or it must be quite an effort to da da da. You can talk about the animal ethics then, but you can that's actually a really great opportunity to talk about animal ethics. If someone says to you, gosh, that looks like a lot of work, watching you debate with the waiter or chat with the waiter, and you can be like, it is so not a lot of work. It is so not a lot of work, and here's why. But most of the time it's just like, so what do you do on your, how do you make your pizza without cheese? Or How did you make this cake? It's what did you substitute instead of eggs? And it's just basic cooking questions. So you can then educate, food is the biggest use of animals. Teaching people about vegan food and how to cook vegan food is a huge advocacy, wonderful positive advocacy. And so that's usually what it's about. You don't usually get questions like you get at a street stall, which is like, what about, you get all kinds of really, people really rack their brains and they'll start asking you about amoebas and things. And I'm not kidding. I mean, you'll get the plants are sentient one. You don't really, I find in my limited experience, like I said, I don't have a lot because I stopped going, but in my limited experience of these sort of social things, you don't get those really challenging questions. I mean, they're not challenging to me anymore because, like I said, I'm very confident in my abolitionist theory now. And I really can answer, thanks to the work that I didn't create, but that I read and learned from and absorbed and thought about and used my brain. Thanks to that work, I'm really prepared for any question. I don't think there's a question that exists about veganism that I haven't been asked several times, even really out there ones. So you won't get, but you it's rare that you'll get those questions at dinner. Mostly you'll get, how would you make a cake without vegan oil? Or don't you find it difficult? You get that a lot. Isn't it a hassle? Don't you find it difficult? That's a great opportunity not just to talk about food and say, no, it's not difficult because all you got to do is use banana instead of egg or whatever. You can say, no, difficulty is relative. Let me explain. And you can do it in a way, and we know this. So I'm trying to. Now I'm still debating whether or not I'm going to socialize, because you don't have to socialize, and I don't know if everyone even goes out a lot and eats out anyway. This might be a group of people, because I don't know them yet. The people I'm going to be working with, the team I'm going to be working with, maybe they don't even socialize after work. Maybe they don't. Or if they do, maybe it's just like the friends. Like there's just a pair of friends who do. In which case, I won't have to worry about this issue. But there was a farewell lunch. I've already been tested and I did not do well. Okay, so here's an example of what happened, which I reverted back to my old behavior and I thought, okay, this can't go on. So happens that, okay, I'll make this very quick and then I'll sign off, okay? So it so happens that I'm working there one day a week, just in case you're wondering. So I am actually working there one day a week, but I'm just an intern. So I'm sort of, I'm not really part of the team. I mean, I am. I'm becoming part of the team. They know I'm going to be coming there to work full time, but I'm interning. It's only one day a week, so it's very hard to have continuity. I sort of come to work and a whole lot's happened, and I don't know what's. Whoopsie daisy, something just fell. I don't know what's happened, but I'm starting to get to know everyone, and everybody knows I'm vegan because it's happened. It's come up. People are like, "Would you like this?" And I'm like, "No, thank you." So most people do. So we, w but it happens that I had come in on an extra day, one extra day before Christmas because they needed my help, one extra day before Christmas, and it happened to be the last day of work of our admin support person. I can't remember her official title, but she did all of our everything for us, ordering all the hearing aids and all of the equipment and all that kind of stuff. And she was like a backbone. I mean, I've been the admin person. You cannot live without admin people, and they are so underappreciated. But anyway, she'd worked there for like almost a decade or more, and she's left. So now we're without her, and I'm like, oh my gosh, this is going to be tough. But anyway, happened to be her last day, and I happened to go on a Friday. I'm only working Tuesdays, and I happened to be there. And of course, we're having a shared lunch to say goodbye to so and so. And I was like, oh darn, I'm not ready for this yet. I'm not ready. But it just so happened that I had forgotten to take lunch, and there's a cafe downstairs that has a vegan sandwich. Now the vegan sandwich was $9 and it was wrapped in plastic, which I found really distressing. I hate that. And it was not really worth $9, and it wasn't very filling, but I had already bought it, so I was like saved by the bell. So I said, oh yes, I'll come, but I'd brought myself lunch. I already brought lunch because I didn't realize you were having this farewell lunch today, because I didn't realize, it was your last day and blah blah. So then it's like, that's okay. So we went in, and there's this spread, the whole table, people have baked, people have cooked, people have fried, people have sauteed, just laid out with food. And of course I'm there in the corner eating my sort of gross little vegan sandwich, and I hadn't brought anything for the table because I wasn't, I wasn't advised of it. And there was fresh fruit and stuff, but I didn't want to go near the table. It's almost like a phobia, okay? So I just, but then there were these gorgeous looking pakora. Pakora is, it's like, in it's Indian, from India, and it's a fried, it's a deep fried, but it can be made out of lentils, and then it's often coated in chickpea flour, so it's gluten free. And most of the time, they're vegan. They don't have meat in them. I mean, maybe there is meat, but most of the time, it's like lentils or chickpeas, or you can have vegetable pakora. It's a bit like tempura if you think of Japanese tempura. It's like you bread it and you deep fry it. But most of the time, for the Indian ones, and they're very delicious. I mean, they're made out of dal and they're made out of all these delicious things, full of spices. The only thing is that I don't know if some of them have ghee or not. I'm not sure. That's the thing about that. So, and there was one lady who, her name sounds like it might be Indian. It's spelled like it might be Indian, but I don't want to be ignorant because maybe she's Pakistani or maybe she's Sri Lankan or Bangladeshi. So, but I assumed that she made them, but I was too kind of. I didn't want to be stereotyping and then point her out because of the way she was dressed and be like, "Did you make these?" Maybe I'm being a little too paranoid. But what happened is the person whose event it was like, "Eat, eat." She wanted, she was like, "Come on." And I was like, "Oh no, I've got my sandwich. I already brought my food. It's okay. I got my sandwich." And then she said, "Look, you can have those. Those are vegetarian." And instead of sort of like saying, "Oh, those look really good. Hey, did he, who made these? What's in them?" And then they could say, "Oh, it's got this, this, and that, and some ghee." And I could say, "Oh, okay. Well, unfortunately, I'm not going to have them because they have ghee, and I'm vegan." And then I could leave it at that, and that would be fine. But instead of doing that, I just muttered, kind of in a really distressed, like, I wish I could sink into the floor and disappear type of way. I was just like, "I don't know what's in them." And then the woman whose party it was, who was leaving, who sort of offered them to me, kind of just like looked at me, and it was just this very awkward thing. And I was like, "Elizabeth, you're so doing a bad job." So I did some role play with Will. So, and what I'm, the kind of thing that I know this, like, people listening might be like, "What is your problem?" But this is my problem. I'm telling you, this is what I go through. So instead of that, next time I'm going to try to say, "Hey, so what's, ooh, that looks good. Who made that? Ooh, can I ask you what's in it? Oh, okay, well, I'm vegan, so okay, I'm just making sure." And you can just do it in a way where it's like, "This is what I do." And then you might actually be able to partake in a lot more of the food because a lot of people don't realize their food's vegan because they don't think about it. There's lots of vegan food out there, as we know. So anyway, I missed out. So that I kind of blew that opportunity, and I sat there in the corner thinking, "I wish I wasn't here. I hate this. I wish I wasn't here." So I'm gonna change. So that was my first sort of thing. So that's not good. So what I'm hoping is that there might be a little welcoming morning tea for me, and then I can blossom into this butterfly that I'm gonna become, where I am just gregarious and engaged, and I say, "Let me see. What's in that? Oh, no, thank you. I won't eat that because I'm a vegan." And then they might say, "Oh, what do you mean?" And I say, "Oh, well, it's got an animal product in it, so I only eat food that doesn't." And then I will eat the fruit, and I will eat the other stuff, and I will be open to engaging in a positive way and put my own sort of, discomfort aside, and my own, desire to run away and hide and isolate myself. I will put that aside, and that's my New Year's resolution. Don't believe in New Year's resolutions. Anyway, it's a work in progress. That's where I'm at the moment. So basically, I'm at square one. After 2 years of uni, I am back at square one. But the intention is there. Will gave me some great role playing. That's actually a really good idea. If you and a friend find itself you're difficult in a difficult situation, and then you behave in a way, and then you're like, "I don't want to behave in this way again." Role playing is actually quite helpful. It just puts the words in your mouth, and it just gets used to you. Just get used to the. That's why the street stall is amazing, because I'm ready for anything at that stress still. Whereas in the beginning, I didn't know, and I'd flounder and I'd be like, oh, I don't know how to respond to this, because I was still learning abolitionist advocacy. But also, you can read the books all you want, but when you're engaging with someone, it's completely, you cannot dictate on paper. So that takes practice. So my street stall, I'm in my element. I am the happiest person in the world. Even when something bad happens sometimes, which it does happen, you know, you get someone who makes it, you know, who reacts in a, you know, just such a, and don't forget, there's people out there with all kinds of issues, and there are, I think, people who are quite sociopathic, and you're going to come across, if you do a street stall long enough, if the odds, you know, the law of averages says you're going to come across a person who is a sociopath, or you're going to come across a person who is whatever, and you just, I mean, you know, but you can't base your whole experience around that, because the vast majority of people aren't that. But you're pretty much ready for anything. So what I need practice with is I need practice with social situations with non-vegans, because the reason why one of the reasons why I'm in this situation is because of the way it happened that I went vegan, because I went vegan at a point where I literally was about to leave all my friends and all my social situations that I had as a non-vegan. And my best friends, I mean, they were my closest friends. And going vegan, I lost touch with them. I just lost touch. I didn't keep touch with them. And I've lost touch with these people. Don't keep in touch with them. They're just, yeah. But I left and I came to New Zealand, where I had been gone. I mean, I left New Zealand. I was gone for half my life. I was gone for almost all of my adult life. I was gone from New Zealand. So I just had nobody. So when I came back as a vegan to a new, a new country sort of thing, you know, like where it's a whole, like, didn't know anyone except my family, didn't have any friends. I have caught up with a couple of old friends, but, you know, they're not vegan and they don't live here in Auckland. And then we started talking about things and then they stopped contacting me. I didn't say anything crazy, but there were a couple of interactions, and they knew that I'm vegan, and then they, for whatever reason, they decided, you know, and that happens too. I mean, that's whatever. Here's my baby girl. Hello, Shabby. Hello. She's got spiderwebs all over her face as usual. So anyway, I think that's kind of one of the issues. So I sort of was like this new situation where I had to make new friends, and then I didn't really have to be around. I had no friends, so because I came to New Zealand and I just had my family, and that was an issue, because I thought, oh, my family, my mum, you know, all I have to do is tell her about this and she's going to go vegan right away. And same with my brother. I was like, oh, my brother's so going to go vegan. And they didn't. And then it was meeting new people, I guess other people who go vegan with groups of friends, and they're always, or they live with people, because I lived alone too, and I live alone, so I think maybe that is added to the sort of the awkwardness, my social development as a vegan has been, like, as a new, like the new, you know, not around people that I know, who knew me before, and who I still socialize with, and do you know what I mean? I don't know, maybe that's one of the reasons why I am the way I am, I don't know. So that's my story. I don't know if there's anyone else who can relate to anything I've said, but if so, I understand. Hopefully you understand me. And anyway, Happy New Year, everybody, and let's keep going with our unequivocal vegan advocacy. We're going to change this world, and don't ever give up hope, ever. And let's have a wonderful 2019. As of the last week, I have posted about 2 new vegan restaurants in New Zealand. One of them was a non-vegan restaurant who has now become a vegan restaurant, and I verified with them, because there's still this thing about honey. So whenever someone says it's a plant, because everyone's using the term plant-based now for restaurants, restaurants use that plant-based, most of them. So they say, this is plant-based, and I'm like, yeah, well, I've heard a lot of plant-based, and there's like, quote, plant-based people who use honey. So I'm like, okay, do you know honey's not vegan? Yes, we know honey is not vegan. We do not use honey. So there's 2 new restaurants, and I posted about them. So, you know, things are still, it's still happening, people. It's still happening, and we just have to keep sort of fighting the good fight non-violently, Okay, so happy new year, everyone. Thank you so much for listening, and I will be back. Bye.